On today's show, John almost loses his scholarship, gets fired at a Greasy Spoon, and somehow gets mono twice. I almost lose my driving privileges and come dangerously close to finding a drunk guy while wearing a muscle shirt. Plus, a conversation on living in the moment. Today's episode is not sponsored by IKEA. Our instructions are self-explanatory. Let's do it.
Entering a new decade of episodes, 171, it's Talk About That.
It's a new decade?
Well, within the episode. If the episodes were years, we're in a new decade, 171.
If the episodes were years, it's been 171 years. I don't understand.
It's a decade, man. It's in groups of 10.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Number 18?
I didn't realize you needed everything to be not literal. I thought you'd be able to.
I don't know what you're doing at all. I'm celebrating a Hallmark event today.
Today?
It's my 26-year anniversary.
Wow.
Of being married.
Seems like just yesterday you were only married 25.
That's such a damn thing to say. Yeah, so I'm...
Congratulations.
Yeah, Curry had to work today, but we're going to try to do something tonight.
Yeah. We're talking about some cool Nashville stuff.
I need to do something, but I don't need to talk about it here, because then if I don't pull it off, it'll be like, she'll listen to the episode and be like, he was going to do all that. Oh. And then we just, you know,
went to Crystal.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Got a sack full. Happy anniversary. I gave you a few things at lunch, some cool Nashville restaurants, but you guys are not, I don't know how foodie you are. You like,
we're foodie, but you know, I had my niece in, we went a lot of places with my niece.
Yeah.
So Nashville is expensive, man.
Oh, yeah.
But we went to Pinewood Social.
Pinewood Social.
Which is very good. Where else did we go? Party Fowl.
Pinewood's got a bowling alley, by the way, in the restaurant.
Yeah.
For people who don't know that, if you're not Nashville. Uh-huh. If you want to visit Nashville, go to Pinewood Social.
Yeah,
it's kind of a sponsor.
It's kind of a cool hipstery place to be.
Yeah, I've written there quite a bit, in a lot of meetings there. It's a nice place to...
But yeah, so it's hard to know. Party Fowl, because the...
Perfect name.
Her friend wanted... some hot chicken.
Hot chicken is a Nashville thing, but
he tried the hot. He didn't do chicken apocalypse or whatever the hottest was.
Yeah.
A flockalypse. I think they call it. I'm serious. I think they have some kitschy name for it.
Well, they've already named a pun for their restaurant, which I just think. Or is that a homophone? Where you spell it differently, but it's pronounced the same. Foul and foul.
Huh.
I don't know. There's no way to know.
You're the one who writes books, John. This is sad.
You almost said I'm the English major. I'm not an English major. It's dumb that
you
were
weren't you an English minor?
No.
You were biblical?
Johnny, I barely speak English.
You were a history major.
Political science minor.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
You didn't know that? Yeah. Johnny, I have a degree in political science. That's why.
And you didn't go into politics.
I'm not sure political science is what you
take to get into politics.
You take law to get into politics.
Oh, really?
You go all the way to law school usually.
Huh.
Yeah. Because that way you understand.
But then they don't have the science. They don't have political, the science behind it.
Not sure it's a science right now as much as
maybe that's why so many of them deny science. They're like, you know what? I never heard of it. What is science, really?
Should have taken political science.
I just was told I could stand here and argue and that people would vote for me.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, because it's a Bachelor of Arts with a major in history and a minor in political science. So I have a Bachelor of Arts in a science. Now, how does that work?
Does that feel like a misogynistic term to call your undergrad, like, a bachelor degree? Because women get them. They're not bachelors.
Wow, I've never actually thought of the etymology of where that comes from.
They should get what would it be?
Wow, you're going to make it worse.
A bachelorette? A maid degree? Like if you're... No, what would it be?
Oh, I'm sure everyone would love to have a maid's degree. Wow, you're just...
A bachelorette degree, yeah.
Yeah, a bachelorette degree. Why don't
they give you like a rose? They choose you at the end?
I don't need to be chosen. I just paid $100,000 and worked for 4 years.
Do you think just because you pay tuition that you deserve your degree?
Well, if you get the grades, Johnny.
I think you'll get the grades if your check clears.
Lots of people drop out of college for grades, and that's the hard part, that they've paid for it.
Oh, man, what a bummer to go tell your family that.
Mm-hmm.
So my niece is in the aviation program at Auburn. She starts That's why she came in. She came in sort of kind of her last visit before she started.
Do they call
school.
It the War Eagle program?
They don't. They okay. call it a flockalypse, which I was surprised by. No,
she's starting, right? Freshman.
She's just starting, yeah. And you know, she wants to be a pilot. And, you know, it's not cheap. This is an expensive program, you can imagine. Because you're right away, you're in flight training, and you're in, you know, she's going to be in planes a lot. And
is she going military?
She was doing ROTC, like, as part of it, but I'm not sure if she's going to. No, she wants to be commercial. But she's a military family.
Yeah.
Like my brother-in-law was Air Force, and he was a navigator. So I don't know. I don't think she wants the military application though at all. I think she wants to fly.
With lots of your commercial.
There's so few female private pilots, and so it's kind of like she's excited about that part of it that she gets to kind of be.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be a great field to go into. I mean, it's a lot of obviously.
I'm looking
travel.
Forward to the free flights.
Oh yeah.
That's what I want.
It's gonna be a while.
I want benefits.
It's gonna be a while. Like, well, will you still be a comedian when she finishes all that?
I don't like your attitude. Well, I'll still be a comedian.
I remember my freshman year, speaking of paying for things, because I had the scholarship that we talked about the other day where you talk about, John Driver.
Let's talk about your scholarship again.
No.
You're really proud of yourself.
Let's talk about how I almost lost it.
Oh, really? I didn't know this.
Yeah, so this is, you're so quick to judge, and here I was going to be vulnerable about my misgivings.
I didn't know your political science minor, and I did not know that you almost lost your scholarship.
You and your Tom.
This feels like a form didn't get sent in or something.
You and your tomfoolery.
It feels like a technicality, though. It doesn't feel like something like your grade wasn't there. It feels like you forgot to email them or something.
No, but I haven't told this story since I've been out of recovery. So I can see now as I'm previewing it in my mind how I still tilt it to my advantage. So I'll tell it as I would normally tell it, and then we'll pick apart all the things that I should have told differently.
It's my favorite thing to do. Our podcast should be called Pick Apart That. Because that's what we do. You say something that's pretty, you know, whatever. It's very benign. And I'm like, let's talk about your motives. And then I get into it and make you sound like a horrible person. It's my favorite thing.
So I went in, and you and I both immediately that first semester, we started working, volunteering. We talked about it at a church. So I was teaching Sunday school, playing piano. You were playing guitar by the mid-semester, I think. We were starting a band. Did we start the first semester or was it the second?
I think we were already playing in 98 when you started school.
Yeah. And so then I went and ran for freshman council.
And the Vols won the championship that year.
Yeah.
So is that a coincidence?
Probably was. Yeah, big one, probably. My dad used to always say he thought that God just basically, because I went there, like,
yeah, that's,
you know,
why
he decided to give us a, you know what, they might as well get one, because I love John.
And we didn't win since. Also, God honoring.
God's like, look, you only get one. This sounds just like God to me. So,
it does.
Yeah. So, freshman council, I ran for vice chairperson and won, which was dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on the student. There's five branches of student government in Tennessee.
Hold on, let me see if I can guess them. Executive, legislative.
I don't. You had student services.
Party planning.
You had some sort of. There was some other council. I forget what all of them were. I was on three of them that freshman semester.
Oh, wow. Well, you took a lot
on. So I did freshman council. I did student services. And I was some other representatives. I had these meetings like every night. And I had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Immediately. And I was
that
taking.
Sounds like you're paying yourself. Immediately, of course, I got a girlfriend.
In retrospect, I probably should not have immediately, you know, but I jumped right into a relationship and she lived way out.
Yeah.
And so I would drive because she was out near where the church was, actually, probably 20 minutes more.
Coming back at all hours of the night.
Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah, I'd go out on dates and stay out late. And I was taking Calc 2.
Mm.
Okay. That's like twice as hard as Calc 1. Calculus 2 is so hard. I took AP Calculus in high school. Calculus 2 is so hard. I had no idea. Like, it was one of the first times I was ever lost in a class. Like, my roommate was brilliant, and he's a lawyer now in Nashville. And I would literally stay up at night. He'd explain to me what the professor was talking about. And that was the first time in my life I was like, I have no clue what this is.
Yeah.
So it was a very jarring thing. And then I was in chemistry, freshman chemistry, which is like a nightmare, just a nightmare at Tennessee. So I had like 18 hours, freshman chemistry, Calc 2, three branches of government, new girlfriend, new band, church we're working at. And I did too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so And I got mono, I think, that semester.
Okay.
Like a relapse because I had it in high school.
Wait a minute.
Just,
you can get mono more than once?
Yeah, you can relapse. It's like my throat was...
It's called a relapse?
Yeah.
Sounds like you fell
like
off
the virus
wagon.
Would stay.
I try my best to keep mono at bay, but it was too tempting.
I've been clean from mono for... It was bad because my tonsils and everything would grow big. But I think my tonsils were 4 hours, but I remember I was so tired all the time.
Your lymph nodes, underneath your throat there, underneath your jawline.
Yeah, I got sick, wasn't doing well. And so my grades, you had to keep it 3.25. Average in order to keep the scholarship, and I was at 3.14.
Oh boy!
When I got it that first year, and I remember like my life flashed before my eyes, like it was this. You had just said it's what cued it for me. This idea that I was going to go home after getting this scholarship, and after I had succeeded at everything,
you could still have stayed. You just have to pay for it, right?
Yeah, but
even so much
the
money.
Shame though, the scholarship was like a life changing. Oh my gosh, you know, because it was only 10 students out of the whole population of that class, and it was a big sort of thing, and they'd honored me big at home. It was one of those like I just blew it, and I had a semester to be on probation, and so I remember that semester just being like I have to do better, obviously. So
I don't remember this happening.
Yeah,
you were just putting your nose to the what have you, and I was just like. You're late for band practice. Yeah. What's wrong with you?
What are you so stressed out for?
I was married. Yeah.
Oh, and I was so mad at you for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were married already. Not a care.
That's
in the
a very young evangelical thing to be mad about.
Oh, sure.
Because you're just imagining my perfect life just because I can have sex.
I think you were making it out to be pretty perfect. You were like, you know what?
Well, there was some making out. Yeah. I don't know. It's stupid.
You were like, hey, sorry about your problems. I'm married. I'm going to go home now. You know, it was just real. You had no empathy. I'm just kidding. You had empathy.
No, but I did not realize that your grades had slipped and that you were in danger of losing your... Maybe you told me. And
well, it was probably one of the hardest semesters class-wise of college was my first one, which was not smart. So the next one was easier. I don't remember what I made the next one, but I graduated.
You stayed in, yeah.
I stayed in and didn't lose it, and that was a Jesus blessing. So,
But I mean, when they... So, yeah, so they give you that probation period to, like, pull it back up. They don't just be like, you fell below this line.
Yeah, they gave you probation. I got it one semester to pull it up. The deal is, though, that was around the time that I began realizing I don't think I want to do student politics and all that on the level I used to. Because I was student council president in high school and president of all the classes and all those things. I loved that stuff, that leadership. And that's when I began to access more of the, like, artsy ministry side.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would feel better writing songs or writing or ministering, you know. So it really was a big kind of turn that I still struggle with, and though maybe I should have stayed on and done more, you know. So but I don't know, it kind of...
You'd be president by now, maybe.
Guys, I'm asking for your vote in 2024
we need a new voice. I think it's a lot of old people running, you know.
Yeah. Are you saying I'm not old? I like that.
Well, not old compared to who's running.
It's true. Do you realize
late 70s?
I mean, could have been president 7 years ago. That's how old I am now. But yeah, it's true. I would be a lot younger than the people in office now.
Did I ever tell you that I was on probation for my license?
I think you have told me.
I got my license suspended. Well, it was basically I got like 2 or 3 tickets in a row. And there was Tennessee had just changed the rule. It was like points.
Uh-huh.
And it was like 12 points in a year. And I got 2 like 6-point tickets in 3 months.
I wish they wouldn't call them points. It sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like the opposite of golf. Like golf is when you score, it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
the object of golf is to play the least amount of golf. It's just that's a weird thing. But
right.
Yeah, so the object of... You don't want to score points. This is not Grand Theft Auto.
When they say above par, shouldn't it be below par?
Man, my hand just exploded. Okay. But so that's what happened. So I was, you know, working a job, all this stuff. A married person. It's just like, it's very dehumanizing. You're like, do you get this call? Or I went to court and they were like, yeah, technically we're supposed to suspend your license. So I got this letter. And then I went to this place where there was like, it was called a hearing. I was like, well, when you say hearings on... You know, I think of like congressional hearings.
They got a little placard that says,
"Where were you?" And you're like,
little placard says, "Mr. Weddington," a little picture of water.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody's whispering in my ear.
Senator, I do not recall.
Were you doing 45 and a 20?
Hey, put your hand on the microphone, talk to your lawyer, come back.
It feeds back a little bit.
Wait, could you repeat the question?
But it wasn't that at all. It was some little outbuilding like you see when schools do like...
A portable.
Yeah, it's a portable.
You had a hearing with a judge in a portable?
Yeah. Which you could tell it's like, this doesn't really count. You know? It could have been a scam. Maybe there was like, give me your PIN number.
So
and then they just take
see.
My credit card number. Yeah, so I went to a hearing in a portable, and it was just this judge. She goes, I'm going to record this. She started like an actual cassette recorder.
Wow.
And she, whatever. And then she said... You know, I don't remember if I had to make a statement.
Son, what is wrong with you?
Exactly. Slow down. And she's hit stop. You know, you're free to go. No, basically she said, you've got a year to, like, if you get, we're going to give you a probation. And if you get a ticket in this year, then we're going to suspend your license.
And you were like, but I got all these tickets. Where do I redeem them? Can exactly. I get the teddy bear?
She just put them on this spindle. And she had this one of those things with the. But it was basically this thing of like the fear of God. You're like, oh no, I can't get a ticket. And I was pretty much a speed demon then. I was always late to things. So I'm always in a hurry. And I remember, but she said, if you get a ticket this year, we'll suspend your license for a year.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't suspended, but it was suspended between the time I got the letter and that hearing, I couldn't drive. So it was like 6 days that I had to get rides places. So it was already like, I don't want a year of this.
Yeah, you don't want this life, yeah.
And so I said, sure, I signed the papers, and then I got a ticket like 3 months later.
No way.
But I went to driving school, and they don't ever turn it in. You know, if you go to driving school, it never sees.
But they should have been flagged in the system.
That's not how it works.
I bet you flipped out when you got pulled over.
I may have lost my mind.
Did you beg the officer, like,
no.
If I get one more, I'm going to... He's yeah. like, sir, step out of the car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One time I did get stopped. I remember this because my two friends that were in the car with me still say this. I was going on 640 in Knoxville, which used to be 55. Now it's 65. But I was going... I don't know what I was going, but I was... I really don't know. But I didn't think I was speeding. You know, you're in the car and you're just like, this feels like the right speed. I'm with traffic.
Yeah.
And this cop gets out and it's somebody who's with, like, they're training somebody.
Oh, no.
And so they're not going to give warnings. It's that whole thing. Like, you know, if you're training somebody, you're trying to be like, this is how we do this. We're going to be tough.
Yeah.
And so I was with my buddy, Jeff. He was in the back seat and Curry was with me. We just started dating, or maybe she was still dating Jeff, but she goes, this lady cop comes and she goes, do you know how fast you were going? And I go, no, 55, I think. She goes, you were going 67. And I go, 67? And the way I said it, it was like evidently that offended her. She goes, get out of the car. And I go, oh, no. And so I tried to like, no, I'm fine. You know, she was like, get out. And so I got out and she had me like stand at the back of the car while she, you know, ran the stuff. It was like a very like a power move because I said 67. So when I got back in, I mean, forever. Anytime we were like 67, they said 67. Curry still, if she hears the number 67, she'll say it in a very incredulous tone.
Oh my! Is this 640 is also where you're famous for another.
Oh, that's right. That's when I got out of the car.
Yeah, Johnny and I were working out late. That's back when we were getting fit for the first time.
Yeah,
running races,
first of many.
Working out. I had no children, obviously, so we could go all hours of the night to the health club.
Uh huh.
And we both were like sleeveless. We came back and this lady was on the side of the road and this dude was like harassing her.
Yeah. He was trailing her in a car.
Yeah. And she was
like,
walking.
Get in the car. You could tell it's one of those situations. She's walking away and I'm like, this feels really weird.
Yeah. It was like 11:30 midnight. It was late.
Yeah. Saturday night. So we look at each other like, what do we do? We took the next exit, looped around, got in front of the guy and in front of the lady so that we were kind of in between. She was in between us. And then I get out, or you get out. I probably got out because I was on the passenger side. Was I driving?
We both got out.
And it was like, hey, are you in trouble? Do you need a ride? And
she was like, I'd like a ride. That'd be great.
And then the guy gets out. He stops. He comes over, and he starts talking to us. And he's kind of like a shrimpy guy.
Yeah.
But you can tell he's like, either he's been drinking or he's just got a really bad personality and is just belligerent all the time because he was being very like, this is none of your business. Stay out of this.
Yeah.
You know.
So he starts to kind of come in the back door of the car where she is.
Yeah, she's getting in the car and he's trying to stop her.
And you, all of a sudden, Johnny, gentle Johnny.
Like, oh, boy.
Like, it's like you, what was that guy?
It was a damsel in distress, right?
Yeah, like you kind of hulked up a little bit.
Yeah.
And the guy looked at you, turned and looked at you, and you said, hey, I promise you don't want to fight me. It was awesome. And he didn't.
No.
And he backed off and went back to his car and went took the lady home, and that was it.
Yeah. And the thing I remember about that is we go to church Sunday, and the way church was, John played on the worship team, and our drummer, Andy, played drums. It was one of those things where you get to worship practice late, and you guys do the song, so you don't have time to debrief any stories from the weekend or catch up. But then there's this walk. Like, you go back behind the stage after worship, and then you walk underneath in the fellowship hall and get to the back of the room, go back up the stairs to the back of the room, then you walk in and sit down with your family.
Right.
And that's how the worship team would do it. In other words, you don't just get off stage and walk forward. They would go back.
Right.
So I knew, like, I was counting the minutes. Like, as you guys got off stage, I was like, John is telling Andy this story right now. And I have like 2 minutes until Andy's going to give me crap about it. So Andy comes, and I feel him come down the aisle, and he sits right next to me. And then, like, somebody's doing announcements or whatever. And right in the middle of the announcements, I can hear, like, they fade out, and Andy just turns to me and he goes, "I promise you, you do not want to fight me." And I just kind of hung my head like, yeah.
That's awesome. It's a great story. So now you have two on 640 in Knoxville, things that all your friends, I mean, who could say that in life? Famous for more things than than just one.
I'm patrolling 640, bro.
I'll tell you something.
I'm either...
Shrimpy drunk dudes beware.
Now 67's nothing. That's two over. I'm not even going to get pulled over. I was ahead of my time is what I'm saying.
It's true. Yeah,
I probably was doing 67, at least.
67? I've never heard that story.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I sped a lot. I mean, I was a big time speeder.
I was too.
I don't speed at all anymore. Isn't that funny? You know what did it? It's not even the tickets. It's the hybrid.
Really?
I'm constantly watching whether I'm in EV mode, which means you're all battery. So to do that, you kind of have to like stay under the speed limit and kind of tap your brakes and get it in that mode. And then you kind of can hover in where it's not using the gas at all.
This is an extremely emasculating story.
It very is. It feels like, I don't know. It's like, I like the rush of getting good gas mileage more than the rush of... So I just leave on time, and I get good gas mileage.
Wow. And I still speed.
Yeah, and...
I just know...
And I'm not a real man. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I just know all the spots where the cops might be.
Oh, that's what you do? You have the
everywhere
apps?
Everywhere I go.
Well, they have all those crowdsourced apps. Have you seen those? Like Waze, where they'll be like, Popo's up here.
Rarely use the apps. I just know... Like, even between here and Knoxville, I know every spot they could be. Because, I mean, I've driven it... I don't know, 700 times, like I know.
So you just go, like, you fly, and then you just slow down at those spots?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it's instinctive.
Isn't that just like our lives?
Boy, guys, isn't it, though?
But, unfortunately, someone's always watching, John.
Wow. You know, it's always funny. Someone said that to me the other day. The whole God's always watching thing is always negative.
Yeah.
Like, it's never...
Wow. And he's proud of you. Yeah.
Right. It's never like God's watching because he cares.
Yeah.
It's God's watching because he wants to get you. And so you think about all the youth ministry ways of saying that. Now, look, guys, I know when no one's around and you think no one's watching. It's like, it should be comfort that you hear that God's always watching.
Yeah. Because sometimes you are the guy trying to get your girlfriend to get in the car and you're being dumb. And God's like, I promise you, you do not want to fight me. I took down Jacob, and
I'll take you down, too.
I'll break your hip, too, pal.
Oh, my goodness.
You'll need a new hip.
Oh, my goodness.
Wasn't that like one of our suggested names for our band?
Jacob's Hip?
Jacob's Hip. That would have been the dumbest.
It's so...
You know what? It wasn't any dumber than...
Scarlet Thread?
Or Five Smooth Stones.
They were all dumb.
Jacob's Hip. But it sounds like you're saying Jacob's Hip, like he's a hip guy.
Well, maybe that's what we were going for.
Oh.
A double entendre.
But nobody says that. That's like from the 60s.
Maybe
you're a hip cat.
I wonder what we'd call our band today. I'd be so scared to pick something.
That's the thing. We're so over evangelical culture, and it's so saturated, and everything would be cringeworthy to us, even stuff that's not really that cringy, probably.
Yeah.
So that's a bummer.
The idea,
we've lost our innocence, John.
Yeah, the idea of trying to make something cool is so...
Well, that's the thing, too. As you get older, you don't care about being cool anymore.
It feels inauthentic to me. It's like, I don't know. I want to pick something that I like.
Yeah.
But then, like I said, you got to... Whether it's writing or...
You'd have to think about your band, though. Like, when you're starting a band and you go, my name is Mike Weaver, but people call me Big Daddy Weave. So let's call our band Big Daddy Weave. Like, even he's done interviews where he's like, really think through your band names, guys. Like, he has so much regret about that because he didn't know they were going to be a big deal and be like one of the biggest Christian bands. And now he's your Big Daddy Weave forever.
Yeah.
Hootie and the Blowfish. It's just.
But see, that though.
What is that? Darius Rucker is going to be called Hootie until the day he dies.
I heard a Hootie song.
He's not Hootie.
I still love it.
Yeah. You like Hootie?
Oh, I love Hootie.
I think Hootie took too much hate. There was too much Haiti for Hootie. But. But yeah, that's the thing. The thing I learned about music early on when we started actually doing it and trying to get labels to be interested in us, you just learn a lot more than you do as like a music consumer. And one of those things is that when somebody explodes and becomes they're on the radio every day and they're on the radio so much that you kind of get tired of them, yeah, and you're like, who do these guys think they are? They've spent 10 years getting to that moment.
Right.
And I don't think you realize that as a music consumer, but if you're in a band, you realize that's years of begging your friends to come to shows so you're not embarrassed.
Yeah.
It's so many. Because like Marty, my friend Marty, who played football for South Carolina, he grew up in Columbia, and they were local heroes for 10 years. They'd play all these dive bars.
Hootie.
Yeah, so they were playing I Want to Hold Your Hand and I Only Want to Be With You. Like, they were playing Let Her Cry 10 years before it exploded. And so he was just like so rooting for them. And then it just became this like, them again. And they became uncool to like Hootie or whatever.
Yeah, if I could go back in time, I wish. We did play 8 years.
Yeah.
We probably were right on the precipice, Johnny.
Well, who knows? That's the thing. You mean about 10.
Yeah.
To like get mad, break up, get back together, do all the things that you do as a band.
But the fear would be whether our wives.
Replace me.
Whether our wives are going to break up with us or not. I think it was at the point of. How long can I go do this for $200?
Well, you had all this. Yeah, you probably had more ambition than I did. I kind of was along for the ride and never made a lot of money. And so it wasn't like a thing of like if we're not making this by this, then this has been a waste of our time.
No. And truthfully, if I'm looking back accurately, it's the move to Nashville that changed everything.
Yeah. And you broke up the band.
Well, I got fired from my job.
Yeah.
So thanks for bringing up that painful memory.
At Huddle House.
Have we ever told that?
I don't know.
Wow, it's a lot of personal stories today.
It really is. Shameful personal stories.
So, by the way, he passed away. I went and looked at my old pastor. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I looked up the other day, and it was this year, earlier this year.
Oh, man.
I didn't know, yeah. So, I could tell that story. That's fine.
Well, you could have told it anyway.
Yeah. I'm just saying he... So there was a church in just south of Knoxville, a little church. I was in grad school.
Alcoa.
In Alcoa.
If you know Alcoa, famous for all the aluminum. Mm-hmm. Aluminium.
Yep. It means Aluminum Company or Corporation of America. Alcoa. Yeah, there you go. So,
What is that, an acronym or anagram?
That's a homophone.
Acronym. What if acronym was an acronym for something? We just don't know it yet.
All, I don't know.
Capital. Okay.
So I was teaching out in Maryville and took that job. You came over there because you're a good friend. You're just a good friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you were working with us with youth, you and Curry. And we, that guy, there had been about 10 youth pastors, if I remember correctly, in like 12 years there. So it had high turnover in the youth ministry.
I think a lot of churches have that story.
Yeah.
Especially then.
Yeah, it was small.
The 90s was a very like, get somebody else in here.
Yeah.
We got to handle these kids.
Yeah. But the youth pastor before had been there a long time, and he was a friend, and we'd played. That's how I got the job, is we'd play music there.
Yeah.
And so when he was going back to school, so he, you know, had me come interview, and I got the job. It was great. We spent 4 years there, and we still have, I mean, amazing memories, great kids, and I was teaching school full-time that whole time. And so in the end, I remember I got a phone call from my pastor. Yeah. And there have been some things getting weird. I mean, I'd been there 4 years at that point, so I'd already been, you know, past a lot of the time that people stay. And I remember he said, I want to meet for breakfast before you go to work, because I was going to school. I was like, okay, so we met at a Huddle House, which if you don't know what a Huddle House is.
So you had no idea this was going to be bad.
I knew. I had a feeling.
Oh, okay.
It was weird when he wanted to meet before school.
Yeah.
Huddle House is like a poor man's Waffle House. Like it's
Some people like Huddle House better.
I love Waffle House.
I don't know. I think Huddle House, isn't it regional though too? Do some places have both?
I don't know.
Is it like White Castle Crystal? Because some places have both of those too.
I feel like I saw Huddle House the other day somewhere out of state, wherever I was, and I can't remember. Anyway, so I sit down and I remember the guy, he wouldn't, something was wrong, but he wouldn't come out with it. And this was weird. I was going to be late for school. And so I actually fired myself.
Oh, wow.
I said, Pastor, I'm going to be late. Are you firing me? I really need to know. And he was like, well, yeah. I was like, okay, well, I'll call you later. So I fired myself in a Huddle House that day.
Wow.
Went to school, taught all day.
Mm-hmm.
And
was it like heavy on your head? Like,
oh, yeah. And probably a little.
Probably for the kids, too. You're thinking like, what are these kids that I've poured my life into? What are they going to do? Not just what am I going to do, but.
Yeah, I was probably waiting.
It's traumatic.
I remember
our youth pastor just left.
Yeah.
And it was kind of over a schismatic thing where the pastor, there was some jealousy. You could just tell. Like the youth pastor would preach on some Sundays.
Yeah.
And it'd be this gigantic, you know, different energy in the room. And people would come and bring friends. And the pastor had been there for years and years and years. So there was jealousy there. And then when he moved on to something else, it was like, it broke my heart. Like I was 14.
Yeah.
So I know that I had to weigh on your mind.
Still weighs on me a little bit, those kids. And I hear from some of them in adulthood. Because the bottom line is, well, we didn't know we were about to move, but pastor never told me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had said something about me that I had done or whatever, but he wouldn't tell me. He'd promised he wouldn't tell. Not a great move, in my
opinion.
Yeah,
I don't like that. When you're like, hey, there's gossip about you, but I got to keep my word.
It's
like, but I'm going to fire you over this thing that can be unsubstantiated.
Yeah, I just think it had run its course. Again, I was outstaying the welcome of the normal tenure there.
Well, and we didn't fit the culture at all of that.
But gosh, we love that kids, leadership. Man. We were
That's
so
the thing. We
embedded.
Fit the culture of that. We made our own culture there. But as far as the culture of that church, the existing culture was very like wood pews, traditional music.
It was an old Catholic church.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful facility.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of friends. And he was great. I mean, I think I had more patience. I look back a lot at younger John and go, wow, I was less likely to like fight for myself.
Yeah.
Not fight for my wife or fight for the kids, all those kinds of things. But
when you're still a kid, you're taking cues from the adults. You're like, this adult must know better about this, maybe.
I knew it was wrong, but I really think I had a trust in the Lord.
Yeah.
See, this is getting real deep. Like I had already lost most of my friends from there who'd worked with us over other church things unrelated to us, you know. And I knew in my heart they were going before they went. And I was like, hey, I know this is happening.
Yeah.
So I guess I kind of sensed something was going to change. And I really had a trust, like, oh, this is going to be fine. It's going to be painful, but it's going to be, I can't make this work, you know. So when we left there, this job came open,
mm-hmm.
which was crazy. It's a whole crazy story I got here. And we ended up leaving after I finished school, teaching that time. I took this full-time job here. Now, 18 years later, almost, I'm still here. And you came later. That's when the band, we were still playing shows when I was first a youth pastor here.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't going to, and I apologize to you and to the bandmates.
We were so close.
I just think it wasn't going to, I couldn't do it all. I was doing construction here. But the best part of this whole story is that, and the reason I tell it, and don't hide it as much, is that pastor 2 years later called me
mm-hmm.
and asked me if he could come to Mount Juliet. And I said, okay. And I was like, because I did have some hurt and everything, but Andrew had really been a huge part of the healing. Because now going from someone being suspicious of you to I'm on the back of a backhoe with this other pastor who's like just all relational, showing me how to do things. He had some church hurt too. Like it was just very much a kindred thing. And a lot of healing happened over those few years that I was like, oh, okay.
So he came and met you. Did you say, only if we can go to Huddle House?
No, I went to Cracker Barrel.
Oh, okay.
Don't have a Huddle House here. Yeah, could have went to Waffle. But I agreed to do it, though I almost didn't. Like, I don't need this. I'm not mad. It's fine, you know.
You knew kind of ahead of time what it was going to be.
But he sat there. Well, I didn't know. I didn't.
Really. Okay.
He sat there in Cracker Barrel in Mount Juliet in tears.
Oh, wow.
And he told me, he said, hey, listen, I listened to the wrong people. I shouldn't have listened to them, and I was wrong about this. And he said, it's been like living in hell for 2 years.
Oh, man.
He's like, I want you to forgive me. So I never know still to this day what was said about me, but he owned it. And my respect for him, and so, again, I honor who among us hasn't done something, you know, where we just were in the wrong place in that season of life? But it takes, it's the way of Christ to say, oh, I missed this, you know, and I shouldn't have done this. And so it was a real, I can still hold that story, act like, oh, I was done wrong. But the truth is, it was made right. You know, it really was. And so I honor him.
And then
him
you were like,
day.
I got to, you excused yourself, and then you ditched him with the tab. Didn't you? Come on, man. One last.
No, I love, he was, then he had dementia at the end of his life and everything. And it couldn't have been an easy road for him. But I always appreciated, and he was always kind to me and stuff. And we had some, you know, bad things.
Some of the stuff's like differences, just generational. Like he came out of like the tent revivalist movement. Stuff. So it was very like when your attendance is down, what you got to do is put a tent in the parking lot and have a big revival service for a week. And that'll get things like that was the big solution to everything was like put some energy into the thing.
Yeah. We had a pretty, I mean, for a church of that size, probably, you know, 100, 150 maybe. I don't think, you know, we had a youth group usually of 25, 30. And we had our own separate building. I was thinking about this huge facility. Remember that? Because it was an old Catholic school. So we were doing all that we could do. The kids were almost all in poverty. And, you know, we were newlyweds and didn't have a lot. Both working. Lars working 12-hour shifts at the ER. And we loved that time. You know, we do all kinds of things with the kids. But it was as much sometimes being like family.
Yeah.
Somebody needs a winter coat for school. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody needs lunch money. Somebody needs. And so it really was like a very pure community in that respect of being with those kids. Because us not having kids, they were kind of like that. And our youth leaders were the same with them. We took them everywhere. You remember all the trips we went. It was so much fun. And a lot of kids had never been out of state, never seen the ocean, never, you know. Our one sweet girl, I remember we went by, there's a statue, a replica of the Statue of Liberty that's maybe, you know, 40 feet high somewhere in Alabama, you know. And she was probably 12.
Yeah.
She didn't know, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And she was like, is that the real Statue of Liberty? You know, like, you know, and you and it was one of those, like, it was so just precious. She hadn't been a lot of places, and she saw the Statue of Liberty, and she was like, oh, and I think we told her, no, it's not the real one. You know, we could have.
Nate has a bit about that. Nate Bargatze has a bit about thinking that the rocket in, what is it, Huntsville?
Yeah.
That's like a gift shop. He was like, is that the real rocket? Like, he's like, I'm asking these questions. People are like, are you that dumb? Like, it's a gift shop.
I remember, remember that trip coming up, the same trip.
Yeah.
Because we're talking at lunch about every once in a while, Johnny will lose his cool, and it's the best.
I have a thing of like, it's the best I'm very peacemaker-y and just swallow it until, but I think I keep records, and that's wrong too, like where I'm like, all right, this is going on your permanent record. It's like, you know, that gif of Ryan marking in the book on The Office, you know, where he's just like writing, checking things off. Like, I feel like I'm making a list still. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to. So when I finally explode on you, it's like, remember in June of 1987 when you said, but yeah, I think I have that. It's not good, but yeah.
Johnny, you want to unpack that? Or
I think we are currently. Unpack that.
We had been in Gulf Shores and it was a three van. We took three vans, right? Or was it two?
I don't know.
No, we took three because my parents went, and I think my parents drove one for us. So we had that many kids. It was like 40 kids.
Yeah.
And we had this. It was a really cool trip. And on the way back, we were just exhausted. And you were riding in my van. I was driving, pulling a trailer, I think, of luggage.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was. One of the kids just was like, one of these, are we there yet?
You remember who it was.
I really don't.
Yeah.
I honestly, don't tell me. Okay. I honestly can't. You can tell me after recording, I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, it was like somebody really like just complaining about everything.
And you were riding a shotgun. And I just remember, like, they just kept going and going, and we were driving through. But, I don't know, we were maybe, I don't know, halfway through Alabama on the going north, and all of a sudden, Johnny just snapped. And he turned, and he said, John, because I think we'd lost the caravan. Back then, there was no GPS, all that stuff. You know, you're like, John has been driving for 7 straight hours, and all you have to do is ride. That's all you have to do. And like the kid's eyes got real big, you know.
Yeah. I'm a gigantic 250-pound person shouting at a kid.
That was the trip also where you lost the keys of the van in the ocean, wasn't it?
Right.
No, that was in Savannah. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
You lost the keys of the van. We took the kids swimming.
Tybee Island.
And you came out, remember your face, you're like,
Yeah.
I don't I think the keys of the van.
I got into
pocket.
The ocean with the van key.
And we had to call a locksmith to come make a new key.
AAA for the win. By the time the kids got out of the ocean,
we had it made.
It was done and ready to go. And they never really had to know, but I told them because I'm an idiot. I'm always just like, look what stupid thing I did. That's just how I am.
Oh,
but
gosh, we've all done it.
It's,
I mean, not that.
No, no one's been that stupid. It was weird, too, because there was like a riptide that day. And I remember thinking, like, I think I put the keys on the toe in my shoe. You know, you put the key in the shoe up by the toe. No one will think to look there. they'll stop at the heel. They don't see keys. They're like,
it can't be. Yeah.
But, I realized immediately, like, I've made an enormous mistake. So my day at the ocean was over pretty quick. And I went and started calling locksmiths.
But you know what? This is the thing. They just had a youth trip this weekend that Sadie was on, her first overnight youth trip, you know, and they got to Nashville Shores. That was like their big day thing. They did a service project that morning, packing backpacks for our backpack program here at church for Wilson County Schools, because school started this week. And they went, and we had pre-purchased, you know, we get the group discount, and then we had, everyone had a meal and unlimited drinks.
Hot day. Yeah, you got to have that.
Well, they get there, and I don't know if it's just because of COVID. It's the last weekend before everyone goes to school. I don't know if they're understaffed, but they, like, Ty calls me, our youth pastor. He's like, dude, like, the kids waited. We put a youth leader in line, and it was an hour and 45 minutes this youth leader waited to get food, and the kids never got fed.
Oh, wow.
And when they would wait for drinks, they kept running out of cups, or they wouldn't give it to the line. So basically half their day, when the kids are off running around, it was the most crowded the park has ever been.
Yeah.
And so literally it didn't work out. So they quit early and took them to eat and everything. And they, you know, lost like an hour on the day so the kids wouldn't just die of starvation, you know. But I was like, that's a youth trip.
Yeah.
Like, that's,
you have to roll the punches on a youth trip.
There's always
all you have
be,
to do is ride.
Right. I really did. I was thinking the other day, because I did write a book for youth ministry called Letters to the Other John.
I like how you pointed, like, I believe it. There's somewhere on the shelf.
Wait a second. Yeah, because this is the only place it exists. You know, we threw away
a lot.
2,000 copies of Letters to the Other John the other day.
Those are out there somewhere in the, what if somebody's in a landfill like, this really spoke to me.
Well, forever.
What if you inspired another generation?
I don't think so.
Of people who dig through garbage.
I don't, maybe,
to
maybe
go into
so.
Ministry.
But there are some good stories in there.
Yeah.
But everything else.
You know what's interesting about you as a youth pastor? You're a tremendous youth pastor. But you had a real aversion to, like, games. You're like, I don't want to do, we're not going to do Chubby Bunny. We're not going to do, because I want these kids to be able to, like, hear from God on their own. And I only have them for an hour a week. I want to, like, this is going to be serious time. Like, you weren't a serious guy all the time. You had funny sermons. But I'm saying, like, you did not. You didn't have a book in your office of like 1,001 games for kids. Like, that would never have interested you.
Games are not my strong suit.
Yeah.
So I would get leaders to do it.
Yeah.
And then I wanted them to do game stuff in their small groups with their leaders.
Right.
But when it's time to have the service time, and I told them the first
you
night.
You wanted to feel more like an adult service.
I remember the first time I came here, that where they'd come from, there was like 12 kids.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like 6:30 we were supposed to start, and they were outside playing football. 6:45 outside play, and everybody came in, and I turned to one of the kids that was there, and I said, where is everybody? They're like, well, this is what we do. We play football.
Yeah.
You know, and then at the end, I was like, well, let's go get them. So I pulled them in that night, and I was like, hey, listen, we're going to have a lot of fun.
It's like Morgan Freeman at the beginning of Lean on Me.
It's very,
when there's graffiti on the walls.
The teacher's getting his head pounded into the concrete.
Like, this is school? Yeah, this is what we do here. And you're like, not anymore.
I'm crazy, Joe.
And then you grabbed a baseball bat and you chained the door shut.
I got the bullhorn and I punched the drug dealer.
And then together you held hands and sang Lean on Me. It was very motivational and beautiful.
You know, I don't know if I told you this, that was the night, you weren't here yet, obviously, we were in the wedding chapel, but that was the night I was talking about what's at the heart. We have all these things wrapped around us that we show people that's not really us.
Yeah.
You know?
This was the wedding chapel you guys used before we built the building.
Right.
Just for the listeners.
Yeah, sorry. And so
we were renting a wedding chapel to have services in.
I had this big ball of bubble wrap.
Yeah.
And I was talking about how if you...
It's like our lives.
If you allow... Some of y'all, you know, we have all this, we're insulated, we keep people away.
They're like, John must have got a package today. This is, he's running short on...
No, it was amazing because it was darker in the room we were in. And the kids were kind of, they're sitting like, oh gosh, here we go. You know? So I'm kind of trying to motivate them. And that was the whole point. It's like, hey, the most fun we're ever going to have following Jesus is actually super fun when you're all in for this, you know. I was like, but getting to the real heart of who you are,
yeah,
it's going to hurt a little bit. And, you know, you're going to. So I started kind of, I would crack it a little bit and pop, and I'd crack and pop. So some of what we resist, like really being broken, we resist allowing ourselves to be known. And so I just went crack, and I'd cracked the whole thing in my hand. What they didn't know is I'd hidden one of those camp lights inside.
Oh, right.
And when you break it, it lights up green. Dude, that bubble wrap, it was like someone turned on a dang green spotlight. And I never could have a million years imagined how well it worked.
Yeah.
And I never forget their faces. You would have thought I stood on my head.
Yeah. These kids will ride with me to Valhalla. can do anything.
It was like I'd levitated before them. Their eyes were like, oh, you know, because it was a
that
surprise.
That bought you like 2 years.
It did. I was like, well, I could do anything.
Run through walls for you.
And it was great, man. I mean, so I don't know. I often wonder what I'd do now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But I think kids have changed so much.
I think when I was like putting like a sermon or two together for the very first time, you were like, I was going to speak to the youth, or I was going to do something. And you were like, you were giving me an idea like that. You were like, I had an idea or two of an object lesson. You were like, hold the object in your hand the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
That was your advice. Because I think I had like a football. Uh-huh. It was, the idea was about value. Your value doesn't change. Mm-hmm. And with God, because of grace, I think that was the idea. But the object was a signed volunteer's football that I'd been given as like a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
And it was the whatever season. And I said, this has been signed by two volunteer like luminaries. And when I got it, I was like, this is going to be worth so much money. This is amazing. And it was a year after these two people had left. And it was Lane Kiffin and Monty Kiffin. It was signed by them. And they ended up, of course, leaving.
Right.
And it was a big huff. And it was like gigantic, not a great fit. And then he left Smil and I to go to USC. And so we hate Lane Kiffin. So I was just talking about like this value and how it can shift. And if you just go on human perception, your value. And so you were like, hold the football the whole time. And that was like your advice to me. And I think I did. I think I did. Like it was like a little campfire outdoor thing that I did for another youth group. And then I did some comedy too. It was like I just started to do comedy and I was doing like a little 15-minute lesson too.
Yeah.
You're like, you got to hold that football the whole time.
Well, like if you have a box or something, you're going to reveal something.
Uh-huh.
If you hold it unopened, they'll stay with you because they got to know.
They got to know what's in the box.
They got to know.
Yeah.
So you're just torturing them. And that's how you get people to listen.
I had an idea for somebody said that the other day about my show. When I do a show, that if I'm doing an hour of comedy, the guitar is on the stand behind me and the audience is like, wonder when he's gonna.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think about that there's an anticipation of like, I wonder when he's gonna, is he gonna use that guitar? Is that from somebody else? What's happening?
You should put like swords or something behind you.
Yeah.
Like, just never touch
it. When's the sword coming out? Yeah. There was, I think Rick Altizer told me an idea that I've never done, but I may do it for a taping if I ever do a taping, where I would just like rig up an harmonica on a mic stand and just have it over with a spotlight on it. And then just like at the end of the show, at the end of one song, just walk on, just one one note into the harmonica.
That's
just
great.
To like have it be a payoff.
It was like the single harmony note I did in your show.
Oh, right. Yeah. Same kind of joke.
Yeah,
same kind of bit.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, hey, you know, that's a fun memory lane day. But a lot of them ended with you like having temper tantrums and yelling at people.
Yeah.
I like it. I feel like I came out pretty scot-free.
You did. You look pretty good here. You're just the guy who has the green lights and is now a cult leader.
Well,
the kids are like, whatever he wants, give it to him. You made them all sign like virginity pledges right after that. And that's why.
You must never. Now, going back, though, I don't know. Again, I made myself look good. I realized I was doing so much in college. The truth was I did way too much because I needed the affirmation of it. Thought I could do everything. It was foolhardy.
Well, I think it's a pretty common thing if you're a freshman. You want to just take on the world and you want to be achieved. You want to be, first of all, they give you this scholarship and they say you're special and now you want to live up to it. A lot of people live their lives trying to prove people wrong. Some people live their lives trying to prove people right.
Mm.
You know, and I think you're probably the second kind.
Come on, guys.
You have a lot of people who have said, John, you're so special. You're one in a million.
Yeah.
And now you feel that pressure, whereas some people grow up like they have that chip on their shoulder. I feel like I'm in between. I have a lot of people to support me. I need more people being like, you can't do it. I think I would create more things if I thought there were some real haters out there.
I kind of agree with that. I think that would be helpful. Because when you say one in a million, what I hear is, you know what? Only one in a million guys could screw up all the chances that you've had to do better. Like, that's what I hear. Only one in a million guy could really blow this, you know?
Yeah.
Because people tell you long enough, it's good. I think I'd rather. But I don't tell my kids she can do. I do tell her, this is awful. We grew up and you could do anything.
Yeah.
And your mom told you, surely.
You told Sadie, you can do five things.
Like, you can probably do a dozen. No, I mean.
You can do your chores. I'll tell you that. Or you're not going to get the Wi-Fi password.
You can go do the dishes right now. No, I mean, I think it's one of those, like, I think knowing you have limitations is good.
Yeah.
But there are some people, like in childhood, that all they think is that they have limitations. So, like, I look at you, honestly, and I think you could do anything. Like, that's how I see you. Like, that's not like some motivational thing. I look at you and go, Johnny has, like, a very unique and brilliant mind. He also has the ability to connect with people in a way very few people have.
Only if I'm holding a football.
Right. Like when you put it down, it goes away.
It goes away. Where's the magic?
Because I used to always, you know, I mean, again, to this, and I always think, too, you know, you're married 26 years a day. You know, we're no longer youngins. But there's still a lot of life ahead. Like, there's still a possibility that the thing we would be most comfortable in, or possibly even most known for, not that that matters to me anymore.
Yeah.
But the thing that if you wrote our story, that it still may not be here.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing.
I like that feeling. I'm afraid I lean too much on that feeling of like, well, you know, it's because it's terrible to think that you've peaked. You know, that's got to be a terrible feeling.
Yeah.
That's why child stars go crazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, if you have a catchphrase and you're 8 on Disney Plus, and then all of a sudden you have to go live the rest of your life because the show got canceled, and you're like, now I'm, you know, whatever. I got to say, what you talking about, Willis, if I want to eat?
Yeah.
It's like, so nobody wants to think they've peaked. But, so, yeah, I think that's a good thought. That, like, hey, what if the thing that I'm, I just want to keep, I really like what I do, and so I just hope that I keep getting to do that, honestly. That would be enough for me.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to have more of an itch to do more, though. That's probably part of it.
Well, I don't think necessarily it's outside of the thing you do, but there may be a thing that you do that's unique to your craft.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's going to be outside of comedy or writing or ministry, those things for us, but who knows how society changes or what we adapt to. I was thinking about Forrest Gump today because that's like my favorite movie.
You think I'm going to stumble like Forrest Gump into world events and I'll be the idiot who's just like, what's going on here?
And you somehow make it all work.
I somehow make it all work.
What I thought about him that's so brilliant, I thought about the day he gets the letter from Apple about the investments.
Yeah.
And he says he's narrating, you know, he's like, because they had invested money from Bubba Gump in Apple, and then it took off.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I get this letter. It's some sort of fruit company. And basically it said, we don't have to worry about money anymore. And I was like, well, one less thing to worry about. And it was so, like, I thought, for the all of from my story or any other story I know, if it was real and you're writing it or you're reading it, that would have been the pinnacle. The day I had to not worry about money,
yeah,
you know, and I was praying about this for my own self, you know, the day that I never had to worry about those things is what we all seek. And in his story, it is literally just the shortest scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, just there is a, and I don't think he's the idiot. I think, like, he lived the fullest life. That's the whole point of the movie. This guy actually lived.
Well, yeah, he didn't know enough to have the same hangups that the other people in the movie had, you know?
Yeah.
He just went into it free.
And he loved unconditionally. He loved his friends unconditionally. He loved his girl unconditionally. Like, he didn't have any. They really couldn't. Think about it. Lieutenant Dan's the worst. He's the worst, you know. And he just loves them, you know. And Jenny is even worse. I mean, like, it's so. There's this thing of, I wish I could look through the glass more instead of looking at it so much.
Yeah.
When you look at it, you worry about it, and you don't look at where you're going. And that's where the Lord, I was reading today, you know, that rejoice in the Lord always, and in all circumstances give thanks. Well, it sounds like some discipline that God's telling us to do, but I think that's not the point.
Yeah.
One thing I ask and that I'll seek is I will gaze upon your beauty. Like, I'm gazing upon the beauty of this life that's granted, and I realized I just don't gaze upon beauty very much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm surrounded by it and I take note of it. But, like, you know, Forrest, that whole running scene, like, gets me every time. Like the guy just went running for 2 years and he remembered, he saw, you know, he was talking about what he saw. He's working something out. He's mourning. But I just think, man, that sounds very, well, when you're saying stop and smell the roses. Like, I do think there's something to it. Like,
yeah,
you look at your career, I look at mine, and I think we generally see the lack, or we generally worry about how to sustain it. We generally worry about what's next, mm-hmm. whether I'm making the most of the opportunity to maximize it, so that mainly so that we won't have lack of either more opportunity or the resources that come from opportunity. So it's this constant, for me at least, state of scarcity, this constant state of forward looking and maybe regret over not maximizing the best in the past. And so it's very, very difficult. And I forget which Enneagram type, there's a tri-type or a, sorry, a triad that is very, one's past oriented, one triad is present, and one's future oriented. And I forget which one I am. Laura could tell me.
It's like Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
It's the Enneagram of Before Christmas. That's there's your book idea, bro.
Okay, guys, we just did it.
The Enneagram for us.
More opportunity. But I do. I don't live in the present very, very well.
Yeah,
and I know that sounds like something everyone would say, but like it's a problem.
Yeah, I think it is. It's hard for everybody, but yeah, I think certain types of people are better at. I think I got better at living in the moment than I used to be. Because of our experiences with the band, because we lived in those highs and lows,
yeah.
So much of we're going to get signed, we're not going to get signed. We have a bad show, we feel like the worst. We have a good show, but then like we're like that opportunity that we thought was going to be there never panned out. But then we picked up this festival and we're going to get to, and we opened for Switchfoot, whatever it was, and we keep thinking for this Dare to Be Great situation that we're going to step into. And that's going to mark our path. And I think because I lived in that so long, it kind of wore me down to a nub that when I started doing this, it was almost like, well, it would be fun if I could do this for my job. That was really the only goal I had. And once I could, I had a goal of like, I'd like to keep my calendar full and I'd like to do it on bigger and better stages maybe. But I really do think at least for those first few years, I was still like so wide-eyed of like, this is unbelievable. Can you believe this? In fact, I think I overshared. You know, you were one of the few people I would tell, like, can you believe this opportunity? And I think I shared it with so many people that they were like, all right, enough already. Like, they thought I was like bragging. But I literally was just, I couldn't believe it, that it was working out. And I think some of that I've probably lost, you know, because, again, you talk about that. You get something to lose. You know, once you have something to lose, your mindset changes to like, well, now we just bought a house. My calendar has to stay full. Whereas when you're just whatever, you're just like, I'm making it on a janitor's salary or whatever. I'm just like, that's what somebody asked me that when young comedians always ask me that, they're like, how do I go full time? Like I'm on staff. Like some people are on staff at a church. They're like, I'm on staff at this church. I'm like executive pastor. I'm a young adults pastor, whatever. And I'm blah, blah, blah. And somebody asked me that one time, and I'd been doing comedy like 5 years, full time. And they were like, how do I do it? And I go, well, and they have 3 kids or whatever. I go, what do you make? And they'll be like, $45,000 a year. And I go, it's going to be really hard, you know, to like make that make sense in your head. Because that first year, you're not going to make hardly anything from comedy. Because you're just, A, you're not good enough yet to demand that. And I was like, I was making so little money that it was just an easier leap for me to make in my head. I knew it was the right thing too. You know, I just knew, but beyond that, it wasn't like a big, like, oh, what if it doesn't, like, it was like a jump from one boat into another. Hmm. But, it is interesting how your mindset changes. I'm trying to live in the present better. I think COVID really rattled everybody. I think that's one of the reasons people are switching jobs or not going back to a job that doesn't respect you anymore. I mean, people are like, that's hard. That's the hard part now. There is a side of this where I'm looking at, you know, the conservative side of it where it's like, oh, we told people that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And now they feel like they're better than their job and they don't want to work anymore. But I really do think there was this year of introspection or 15 months of introspection where if somebody was unhappy in their church, unhappy in their marriage, unhappy in their job, they just had to sit and stew on it. And we've never had that.
Yeah.
Like even the racial stuff, we sat around and watched it on TV every day. Whereas when we were all busy lives, it was like people were being choked out by cops a lot. We just were like, oh, man, is this happening again? We just feel bad. But then it was like we were there. We had to live in that moment. So then that weighs, and that's a huge broad brush, but I'm saying like COVID gave a lot of people that moment to just like, I can chart a new path. I can be something different than this. And I don't have, if my job, if my boss hates me and treats me like crap and I'm making $8 an hour, I don't have to go back to that job. There's other jobs.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if we can just get mad at these people. Although, I don't know. It is weird to go into a restaurant and they're like, it's a 2-hour wait. And you're like looking and there's like 42 tables open. You're like, yeah, this feels strange.
Yeah, it's a both and. I mean, it's happening though. You're right. I think it's, and it's been said, I'm sure, but it's still so key that it is a year of introspection. 18 months.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not over.
Yeah, it's really not over. We thought it was.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's not, I always look back again, history. I always look back. Hey, how did they feel in World War I?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody collectively, you know, how did they feel in World War II? How did they feel during the Depression? You know, there's
I'm sure the Depression felt like it was never going to end. We're like, oh, it's so hard. I got to wear a mask. It's like people were jumping out windows.
Yeah. 11 years.
Yeah.
Of, you know, total. I mean, again, Laura's grandfather left to go work for the CCC. You know, that's he's out west planting trees and stuff, you know, trying to. Hmm. I mean, so there's think about the change of that. Like a real person stopped doing farming and had to go do this, you know, in order to make ends meet. So I think, you know, I look at that and go, this is just our, we just have more platforms, more, it's not all bad. I just think we have more ways to express the things. And we also have I think lots of generations before us, they were thoughtful, probably more thoughtful, but there was an acceptance to life a little bit like, well,
all right,
this is what it is. And we're very much like, this can't be what it is. I'll change it. Like we have that. You can change things now.
Well, everybody kind of sort of rebelled against their dad. That's been a thing, is like you rebel against your parents thing, whatever their idea of, if your dad runs a farm, there's going to be a time in your life where you're like, what if I don't want to work on the farm?
Right.
But yeah, you're right. The past few generations is like, I'm going to actively look for other things to do.
Right.
Even if I'm sort of interested in farming, I've got to figure out a way to get out of this town. And because it's just, you see other people's social media or whatever it is, and you go,
yeah,
there's a life out there waiting for me. And that wasn't always available to people. They were just like, this is what life is.
Yeah.
We, on Friday nights, we'd go down to the Dairy Queen, and this is, you know, it's like, this is real life.
Yeah. I think there's a moment where.
Now I want Dairy Queen.
Oh, it's so good. I'm not having it. I'm on day four of doing it.
All right,
good.
Fine. Okay, so, sure. It's my anniversary, John.
Dude, you should have it, man. Listen, you're already fit. You're in the right spot. I'm just trying to get back there, man.
No, but I'll have to ride my bike 40 miles dipped cone.
You could do it.
Okay.
Put the dipped cone in front of you on a string.
Dangle it. You could turn the blizzard upside down. It's going to just stay there.
It won't
come
out, yeah. No. You know, listener, we hope we've turned some things upside down for you today.
And then right side back up and handed it to you with a big spoon.
Through the window.
Delish.
And it was, oh, so good and refreshing. You're like, this was refreshing. So, you know what else is refreshing, Johnny?
Hmm.
Our website.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com, where you can find 171 archived episodes. Binge those bad boys.
Speaking of, we had a listener who has reached out, who has just binged. Samantha says, I started listening to your podcast during the COVID shutdown, and I don't like starting things in the middle, so I started listening from episode 1.
Whew.
Wow. And I'm almost caught up. Johnny, that's 171 episodes.
I'm interested to hear somebody's like take on the changes in our personalities.
Yeah.
And our takes on
things. I don't know if she wants to share that deeply.
Yeah.
But she's like, hey, I'm talked enough about you now. Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. But she's still a fan. She listened to all of them.
She did. She says, your drinking in the shower talk always makes me laugh. I personally am not a fan, but my brother does it.
Okay.
And my husband does it every now and then. This seems like good people to me.
Yeah.
Not sure why this was popped up on my Amazon the other day. And it made me think of you guys. I love the podcast, and y'all make it feel like we are all friends. Keep up the great conversations. And she sent us an Amazon to one of these. It's a shower drink holder.
Oh, like suction
bath
cups?
Suction cup, beverage, bottle, drink, glass holder, caddy. That's what it says.
That seems like a long description.
It's a long description. Stainless steel spring design. So I like this. I'm tempted. I have little
shelves.
You need
something. Oh, you have shelves. But that's where shampoo goes. You need your own caddy.
No, the little ones where the little soaps and stuff go. They're too... Although, you got to have the small cup in order for them to stay, because half's hanging off. So the whole time you're thinking, is it going to fall on my head? I don't know. But you get
past
it.
How high is this shelf?
Well, one's way up at the top.
Cups are falling on your head?
Hey, Samantha, thank you so much for the email. We really appreciate it, and we're so glad you're listening and you've spent the time. And all the rest of you who listen all the time, hey, take Samantha's example here. Maybe go back and check out the archives. There's exciting things there that you might enjoy. And you can also head over, like Johnny said, to our website, and you can check our Patreon page if you like.
If you want to be a patron, we love our patrons. We're actually planning another group call very soon and some more exciting rewards for our patrons. Mm. John's got a new book coming out. You'll get a galley copy of that probably, right, John? A little pre-release copy,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, I'll send a copy to all the patrons for sure.
So that'll be something good that not everybody gets.
Yeah.
We'll go through the landfill and get letters to the other John. We never really explained how those ended up in the landfill. That's for next week.
Yeah.
It's a tease.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did 2,000 books get thrown away?
And I chose
to. It feels like an old-fashioned book burning, like the 70s and 80s evangelicals used to do.
When you throw your own book away, it says something different.
Yeah, wow, it is something.
This is now humility.
Ozzy Osbourne burning his own CDs.
We've got to get rid of it. Sharon!
That'd be a weird moment.
It would be weird. Well, guys, thank you so much for spending the time with us. Even when it's weird, it's been a lot of fun. We'll see you next week on...
Talk About That.
Tired of parenting advice and news headlines that are more confusing than assembling IKEA furniture, we've got just the podcast for you. My dear friend Abby and I are here to help you navigate the parenting roller coaster.
Should your kids be on social media? What should you tell a friend facing an unplanned pregnancy? These are just some of the many questions we tackle on our podcast.
Subscribe to The Real Deal of Parenting wherever you find your podcast.